Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I get to the review at some point and stick it up here on the podcast feed. This time there's a bit of a delay from between reading this book and reviewing it because I've been traveling a lot and I've been performing at a festival over in England, and before then I was on a work trip, so it means I'm actually reading some books, getting through some audio books and things, but it's taken me a while to catch up with some of these review episodes, but so I have. And in this case, my lateness of getting to the review means this is a weird one, because I didn't read this book thinking anything about it in terms of awards, but now by the time after I finished the book, it then won a Hugo, and now I'm reviewing it. So I don't think this is, I think this is, might be the first time I've ever read a book when it's not been an award-winning book, and then reviewed it when it has been an award-winning book, but that it, there it is. Long-term listeners will probably know my feelings for the Hugo Awards, going back over the last 8 years I've been doing this podcast, and through the project where I read all of the Hugula Award winners, which is the Hugo Award and Nebula Award winning novels, the books that won both of them. And that was not a happy reading project or reading experience. However, this time, spoilers ahead for how I like this book or not, I think the Hugos have done pretty well in picking a good book. Last year, let me bring up here the Hugo Award for Best Novel. Last year, I did read three of the books that were nominated out of the five. Ancillary Sword, which is a follow-up novel, and yeah, sure, it was okay, not as good as the first one, which won Ancillary Justice won the year before, so I understand where it was nominated. And then The Goblin Emperor, which was it's one of those books which was like, okay, that, I guess that was a book, that was a story, I guess, a fantasy tale of a emperor who was also a goblin, whatever. And then The Three-Body Problem, which I thought was absolute garbage. I understand why some people like some bits of it, but the writing was terrible. Maybe it was lost in translation. Lots of stuff was lost in translation that way. I thought it was terrible. But you know, sometimes you're thinking with all these Hugo Award slates and controversies and things, maybe there's not some good books to pick from, or maybe you've got to pick from not a great load of books. And here, I've actually read three of the books this year as well that have been nominated. Neal Stephenson, Seven Eves, which I didn't finish. I got through parts one and two, and that's sort of like reading almost a trilogy of other books, just getting through two parts of Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson. You can find my review back in 1.5 stars, whatever I gave it. Ancillary Mercy, which is Ancillary Mercy by Anne Leckie, which was pretty good. I finished off that series. And then this, The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. So of the three books there, yeah, this is definitely the best one out of those three books. So well done, Hugo Award, Worldcon voting people, whatever. But only this year. Yeah, actually, just scrolling back here. Blackout, All Clear One. I didn't finish that. I got partway into the free chapter, the free sample on Kindle. Among Others by Joe Walton. Yeah, didn't finish that one either. Red Shirts, well, yeah, whatever. Wind Up Girl, City in the City. Actually, two good books there. Anyway, enough of that. Yiddish Policeman's Unit. Nope, didn't get in through that one either. Anyway, so well done, Hugo Awards. So let's get on to this one. This is a book that came out last year, and the reason I'm reading it is not, or the reason I was reading it is not because it was Hugo nominated, but I guess because it was Hugo nominated, it kind of bubbled through in my consciousness, and then a few weeks ago, I mean, I had it as an Audible credit. It was sitting on my phone. And then, you know, it was mentioned on this podcast, I mentioned that other podcast that I listened to. And then on the Geek Nights podcast, they were like, hey, we're going to do the book club and we could do this book, The Fifth Season, which is the hot new hotness with in fantasy, or we could do this other book. And they went the other book, but it kind of nudged me over the edge to actually start this book, which was already on my phone as an audiobook. And so I did. N.K. Jemisin, I've read one of her books before, which I will now find. N.K. Jemisin, yes, back in episode 156, The 100,000 Kingdoms, I gave that 2 stars. I think that was the first novel that she had published, and part of the reason why I gave it 2 stars was because it was the audiobook wasn't a very good production. Also, actually, now I think 2 stars, I suddenly remember liking it a lot more than just 2 stars, but I guess at the time it didn't quite connect with me at all. So, I'd forgotten that when I started reading this book. So anyway, I started it, and yeah, it starts off a little bit slow, but picks up pretty good. So let's set up the world of this book, of The Fifth Season. The Fifth Season takes place on a planet with one continent, And I think the planet is called the Stillness, or that continent is called the Stillness, which is quite an ironic name because it is continuously bombarded by earthquakes and volcanoes and other stuff like that all the time. So, sure, the Stillness, oh, it even says here on goodreads.com, the Stillness, a land long familiar with catastrophe. So on the Stillness, humans live, and the seasons, as they're called seasons, this is explained all within the first, you know, first quarter of the book. The seasons are when there's a massive big earthquake or volcano or some kind of rift which opens up and spews out smoke or whatever and ash and sulfur and kind of sets off an apocalyptic event. And the apocalyptic event is called a season. Oh, the apocalyptic event sets off kind of like almost a post-apocalypse, but not post-apocalypse because everyone hunkers down and they've saved all of their food underground, and they've got walls and they have all these rules that they have to follow to get through a season. And to get through a season, yeah, and the rules are all written down on these slabs of stone. They're like religious documents, but because they have to last through earthquakes or through fallout and things burning up, they have to be found again once people kind of like a whole civilization collapses. And then you find these tablets again and you're like, ah, these are the tablets that are going to help our civilization or our town or our city or even village not collapse the next time there is a season. And so, yeah, that's the basic setup. And the fifth season, it pretty much starts off with a scene with someone saying, right, let's do this. And there's a big earthquake. And they're like, well, beforehand there have been seasons, which everyone calls the end of the world. But actually, the world is going to be fine. But this really is the end of the world. And actually, this book doesn't get to that point where the world does completely end. But I as far as I can tell, the fifth season is that there's this this one, kind of like an empire. I think it's called the Empire. I can't remember the name of it, and I probably didn't make a note of it anyway, but this empire has lasted four seasons, and the empire is still together, and this is the fifth season that this empire is going to face, and it's pretty much guaranteed right at the very beginning that it is not going to last throughout this season. And we're like, well, why did this season happen? And this is the story of why that season happened. Why that happened. And you think, well, why would it anything happen? Like, why would earthquakes ever happen? I've got some more scientific ideas of why these earthquakes happen, but when they do happen, humans, the magic humans, can control them or stop them happening or cause them to happen. But the idea is there's these people called Origines. And which I didn't quite hear the first few times. I was thinking aubergines. They're aubergine people. No, they're Origines. And Origines have these different ways. There's one sense that they have where they can like sense when Earth moves, and even if people are walking around, if they're very sensitive, Origines, they can detect just the vibrations of people walking around. And if they're really, really sensitive, if someone's in the other room and they're talking and there's a rock wall in between, they can pick up the vibrations against the rock wall and kind of hear what they're saying and moving around. But anyway, these people detect earthquakey motions and volcanic motions and any earth-moving motions that go on. And then they have like another power, which is to control that kind of thing. So these Origines are kind of collected together into a certain place and trained or forced into becoming kind of like dampener systems. So I was thinking before, like when you read these things about these skyscrapers, I think Taipei 101 has got the most famous one. It's like Taipei is in an earthquake zone. It's got this hanging weight, which is like 300 tons of steel, and it's hanging by this cable. So when there's an earthquake, instead of the earthquake shaking the building to bits, the building kind of dampens itself by this big swinging weight on the inside of the 98th story of this massively tall building, which is, well, maybe not 98th, because Taipei 101 has got 101 floors, I guess. So anyway, these people become human mass dampening things where they, as a shake comes in one side, they offset that shake just a little bit in their surrounding area. And they can do it they don't really know how they're doing it, but they can do it instinctively, even as babies, even as young children. But when they grow up, they can be trained to do it even more. And these people are called the Origines. But they have other bad names for them, like Raga, and people call them Ragas. I can't remember exactly where the name Raga comes from, but that's the bad name for this. And this book follows the story of some of these Ragas and some of these origins and what they do. Now, these people are very useful to society, but they're also cast out by society. And you think, oh, why would they be cast out? It's because they can't always control it very well. They can't show any emotion, because if they get angry with someone, they can start killing people. Because there's a side effect to them controlling things. They have to get heat from somewhere, and heat comes from life. So whenever they do anything and cause any movement in rocks or anything like that, around them or around the area that they're controlling gets very, very cold. So when they're children, they can accidentally kill people by freezing them to death. And so they're kind of cast out and picked up by the final thing that I'll talk about now is by these people called... what's the name of them? The Guardians. Oh, yeah, there's a Guardian. So the Guardian will come along. And the Guardian is a badass job because they are the ones who have to control the young children and turn them into useful people. And I say it's a badass job. It's kind of like a bad job as well. But, you know, not a lot in this world is very happy. There are some happy people. And as these origins got more powerful, they got to get more powerful Guardians, and we get a bit of a backstory there. And the way that you can tell how powerful these origins are, they wear different color rings, different number of rings and things like that. So a one ring origin, not very important and not very powerful, but a 10 ring origin, well, that's as big as it can get. And the way that I was thinking of this is not in the book, but there's a Richter scale in our human world, and I think the Richter scale only goes up to 8, but then you've got like another scale, which is the moment of momentum movement or something like that scale, which works at the top end a bit better, because the Richter scale has got like the wrong exponential curve, so you can never get higher than 8. But anyway, this other one goes up to 10. So I was always thinking in my head, if you're a 4 ring origin, you can stop a Richter 4 earthquake. That might not be true, but that was just kind of the way that I connected things together in my head. There are some other things that I connected together in my head, which I kind of want to talk about, but I think they're meant to be spoilers, because later on in the book, we get these different parts, and it's like, oh, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and all of that means that. And I was like, I kind of picked up on that, like, in the first like 4 chapters or something like that. That was what I thought was going on, and at the end, that was revealed to be going on. And I'm not even sure what I meant to talk about, because this is the same kind of thing. I can't even say that was the same kind of thing as the other one. We're not going to spoilers. Okay, so I might as well spoil a few little bits. One thing, which I don't think is meant to be a spoiler, but there's this kind of question of like, okay, what is this planet like? And it says here that, was it on the Wikipedia page? So the 5th season takes place on a planet with a single supercontinent. Now, there's this section of the book that says, we've not actually... out at sea is very dangerous, and nobody has ever tried sailing around the world before to see if there really is something on the other side of the world from this single supercontinent. Now, at one point, I was thinking, maybe this is like the Lord Valentine's Castle book, where there's this big supercontinent or a few different continents, and there's a storyline in one of the short story collections set in that same world where they try and sail all the way around the world, and that's, you know, one of the storylines, and there's nothing really around there, but the world is so big because it's so not dense. Like the actual planet itself is not a very dense planet, which means it can be massive and really, 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 really massive, but it can still have 1g of one g of gravity, I guess that's what you say. But then it can also have really, really tall mountains, because there isn't all of that activity of, you know, volcanic activity and tectonic activity, so they can do all that kind of thing. So that was one option, but it seemed that this is a very dense planet. It's got lots of volcanic activity. The other thing that I can pull from my science fiction reading past to work out what's going on here is the book Encounter with Tiber by John Barnes and Buzz Aldrin. And there's a continent on one side and a continent on the other side, and there's a different species that live on either side. But it isn't actually a planet. They're not actually on a planet, they're on a moon, but the people on one side of the moon don't know they're on the moon because it's tidally locked with a gas giant. So they think, they even say this in the book, they go, well, our planet is either really, 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 really massive, it's like the size of the orbit of our planet around a moon, or we're on a planet around a moon and we're entirely locked, so we never see it. And that's actually what happens in that story, that one people, they always have the gas giant in the sky above them, like all the time, and the other people never see it. I think that's what's happening in this book. Oh, that's what I suspected that was happening in this book, when there's all these, I thought it quite early on, because there's so many earthquakes. I was like, well, why would there be so many earthquakes? And I was thinking, oh, it's probably some tidal forces from a moon. And then we never heard about a moon. I was like, well, maybe this is the moon as a planet. And then there's even that passage partway through the book which says, oh, we've tried to sail, but we can't sail around the world, so nobody knows what's around the other side of the world. And then I'm like, yeah, this is definitely it. And then pretty much the last line of the book says, hey, let me tell you about a moon. Like, you don't know that we don't have a moon, but let me tell you about a moon. And I'm thinking, oh, either there's a moon that they don't know about and they're going to crash it into the world, and that's going to be in the next book, the end of the fifth season, you know, the end of the world completely. He said, oh, this is how the world ends. Or this is the moon and they're going to do something and drop this planet this moon into the glass planet. So that's one of those things that, like, as I come from a science fiction reading background and I have these other influences and these other ideas in my head, I could kind of start picking these out. I could be completely wrong, but this is those kind of things that I quite like reading fantasy books, which are set in a world which is, I wouldn't say scientifically rigorous, because there's all kinds of weird shit going on in this book. They're talking about these, you know, all these different histories, and there's obelisks floating in the air, and you're like, well, I bet they're going to be important later, and they are. And all these other different kind of things that are going on, all these magically kind of things, but you know, I quite like the idea of a fantasy story set on a world which has got one of these, you know, science fiction ideas that I've read before, but then it's like, nope, we're going to do fantasy on that place with magic and wizards and whatever. The other spoiler I'm going to, but here we go. So the actual story itself goes like this. We have three threads of the story, and they're actually told out of sequence. One is about a child called Damia, Damia, and she discovers that she is an origin, and other people discover that she is an origin, her parents do, and they lock her up, and then they call a guardian, and the guardian comes and picks her up, and she gets taken away and taken into origin school, which is your wizard school kind of thing, and grows up and learns about the world and learns what it's like to be a wizard and, you know, meets people along the way and has adventures. That's one thread. And then there's another thread, which is about someone who is already in this origin school, and she's a four-ring origin, and she is called Cyanide, and the story of her is that she is told that she has to do some breeding exercising because they want to breed up some new ones. So she's sent off to have a meeting with a 10-ring origin called Alabaster. And not only are they meant to get it on and get some babies going, Alabaster is going to become her mentor and teach her stuff about the magicking things. And so that story plays out, and she travels, and they go on an adventure as well, and they have to go here to do a thing, and things happen along the way too. And then finally, there's this other section, which is then told in the second person. So it's like, you are doing this, and you are doing this. And yes, I can't remember the name that's taken, but it's kind of unclear what the name is. And that you is an older woman who is secretly an origin, but is living and without telling anyone. And she's had some children, and the father has discovered that the children are probably origin as well. And for some reason, which isn't completely explained, he has taken one of the children and escaped, taken them and gone on a big journey south to take her away. And so you, which is the older woman, goes to track her husband down and her daughter down for other reasons as well that I'm not going to get into. There's no reason to spoil everything, but is going to go along the way and find that. And on the way, she discovers a small boy, which is not human. We're told that he's born out of a rock at the start, so you think, well, there's some weird stuff going on there. And then she meets up with some other people along the way and goes on a journey, and stuff happens too. And of course, all of these stories come together at the end, or part of the way through. You kind of sort of link these together. Again, this was one of those things that how those three characters link together, I thought was pretty obvious like within like the second time that we got to any of those people, because you've kind of learned this one person, oh, that's that person, oh, and this person, oh, and this person, and I worked out what they all have in common right from the very start, or within like three chapters. By the time we got back around to them all again, when they were swapping through the chapters. But then later on, it was like, oh, and this is it, and this is the revelation. I was like, yeah, but I got that like really early on. So while that was one of the questions going through, I didn't realize it was meant to be one of the main questions, but hey, maybe that's just my history of reading, picking up on that kind of stuff. So what else do I have in my notes here? So, oh, okay, overall, I really enjoyed the story. I do actually quite like stories which are kind of just exploring a world, and that's what we have here. There's some interesting magic, and there's lots of interesting history, and there's interesting places that they go to, and there's different kind of cultures and different species of people as well, like different, you know, and also not just species, but there's different races, like different people have different ideas. At one point, there's like a pirate adventure diversion, which I, you know, didn't really need that much, but sure, it was there, and we got some other stuff, and there's different languages that people have to learn, and all these different kind of stuff. And I actually just really like a secondary world fantasy story. Let's explore this place, you know, going back to, you know, Lord Valentine's castle. It does feel like that way, you know. There's some technology, you know, there's some steam things and some electrical stuff going on there too, and then there's like some alien technology. Maybe it's alien technology, maybe it isn't, but it's sort of like precursor technology, so this stuff is left over from before and we don't really know how it works, but it does kind of work. And there's these ruins and all that kind of stuff, so it's like dying earth precursor technologies, alien technologies mixed in fantasy world, science fictiony kind of stuff going on. And I really just like exploring that kind of stuff. It's kind of my kind of book, and I really enjoyed it. It kind of felt a bit like Ursula K. Le Guin, in a way, that someone is not known, doesn't really know what the politics are, and then they discover what the politics are, and they're like, oh, is that how the politics were? You know, all those different kind of things going on and exploring these other worlds. So there is actually a follow-up book I even see here now, and I didn't realize it was out already, but it only came out on a week ago. The Obelisk Gate, The Broken Earth, Book 2. And that's already just come out, literally, as I was reading or listening to the audiobook of the fifth season. It came out, so there we go. Add to cart. I might as well just put it right in there, because I'll probably get to that pretty quickly, because I really enjoyed it. However, like I say, some of the storylines I did think were a bit, maybe a bit... again, not obvious, but sometimes I was like, what's this story driving to? And what it was driving to was something that I'd kind of worked out before, and like a lot of this stuff didn't feel that in depth. But the journey along the way to get there, I was totally fine with it. I was like, you know what? I'm really enjoying this. This is great. And the characters are great, the interesting people, the guardians are badass, the alabaster is interesting. Also, as we go through, and this is really interesting in a way which is done much better than I think was done in the 100,000 Kingdoms, is that the different people have different accents in the audiobook. Let me bring up here as well. It even says here, this was narrated by Robin Miles. And one of the problems that I had with N.K. Jemisin's first work, the only other book that I read by hers, which I listened to as an audiobook, was that it's set in a place, and N.K. Jemisin is from New York and is, and I guess she's black, or I think, anyway, I'm pretty sure. But because of that, someone had picked out the reader, and the reader had to do the voice of a small boy who is also a god who is the human avatar is a small boy, and for some reason he sounded like some, you know, sidekick, small, like to Will Smith, like sidekick in a sitcom or something. It was like, hey man, oh wow, gee man, and I didn't understand how that voice could be picked. What I really loved about this, and this is the Robin Miles, who's the narrator, does a much, much better job with that, and brings in all of these different characters of different races. So this really does feel like one of those books which would infuriate all of those people who vote against what people want, or whatever this is the book which is a massive fuck you to those kind of people, because it is about women, and it is about people of color, of all different kind of colors sometimes, and I wasn't quite sure where they were, but people from the Arctic. They were saying, oh, people in the Arctic are kind of pale skinned, but most of the people are kind of brown skinned, and these people are very dark skinned, and these people are... And it just felt like a very inclusive book. Why do fantasies have to map one to one onto our, you know, white medieval Europe places? Like, everyone's just a knight with a sword and white and with a beard and things like that. It's like the opposite of all of that, but done in a way which feels like kind of grounded, or it feels like more solid than N.K. Jemisin's previous book. And again, maybe partly that's because of the reading, but I just think it's a better book. It's just better written. This is not someone's first novel anymore. The story has more direction. The characters have more interesting depths. So, not just gender and race, but also it seems to be very interesting in terms of gender identity gender alignment and sex stuff as well. I know I don't want to go too much into the details, but it's interesting, and it doesn't feel at any point gratuitous, even though at some point the amazing sex that the author wants and the characters seem to get is a little bit like, oh, okay, well, that's very handy that everyone has amazing sex adventures to go along with the pirate adventures. It seemed a little bit wish fulfillment there, but hey, why not? It was fine. So what else have I got to say about it? I'm going to go across onto my notes that I kept on my phone, but they're synced to my laptop, so let me just open here. Another thing this book reminded me of, sometimes in a good way and sometimes not in a good way. In a good way, some Brandon Sanderson with his magic systems. They're all about, Brandon Sanderson magic systems always have to have some energy input. They feel kind of like it's magic, but it doesn't break the second law of thermodynamics. And you're like, okay, well done for coming up with magic, which adheres to scientific principles. So we get a bit of that, which is done pretty well here. But also, it has Brandon Sanderson's swearing problem, where I ranted a long time about this, I think, in the first book, in his... what was it called? The one with the let me have a look. Find Sanderson. A Way of Kings. And I gave a good rant about how bad you can write a bad swear word. Or, like, when you do a swear word... you can't just come up with a word that then people say for it to, and that is the swear word, and it's immediately a swear word. Because if you pick a word which existed in the English language, which isn't offensive, and then use it over and over and over as an offensive word in another world, that can work, but it doesn't work in Brandon Sanderson's, because there's storms, there's magical storms, and he's all like, well, storm you and storm off. In other words, he's trying to say fuck you and fuck off. But first of all, storm you, to storm someone means something. Like, if you storm a building, it means you storm a building. And if someone storms off, it means they're angry and they storm off. So you can't say, oh, storm that place or storm off, because you're doing, it doesn't work very well. And I go in a long rant about that. And here it's rusting. And apparently, now I understand why this works, because rusting, you don't want to make anything out of metal, because if it has to survive, you know, through the seasons with sulfur rain, it's going to rust away. And they even say at one point, we went to the city and they've got steel walls. They shouldn't have steel walls or gates. They should have stone walls and stone gates, because those last a lot longer. But it rusting and stuff. So my own little check for fake swear words... in books, in fiction, in science fiction or fantasy, which it can be used. First of all, is it scatological? And this isn't. It's not pornographic, no, and it's not got religious overtones within the book at all. So this kind of fails that test. Every single time someone said, you rusting idiot, or, you know, rust that, it never worked for me, not once, and it always took me out of the book, which is a pity, because I think... But this is the weird thing. There was lots of fucking and other things going on in this book. There didn't seem to be a replacement swear word. Because if you're going to swear that much, but it's not a children's book, and people are actually going to say fuck and all these other words, which, like, I don't mind, but yeah, let's start fucking, they say at one point, or whatever, you know. This is not a child book. It's not a family book. It's not a young adult book in any way. This is like an adult fantasy book with lots of bad language in there. So I was like, why did we put in the fake swear word? I didn't quite understand what it would need to be. And I think there's probably, if you workshop it a bit, probably a better swear word that could have been used, except rusting idiot. What else do I have here? I like the balance between dangerous magic people. Oh, yeah. What I do like about this book is that there's always a sense of danger about the main characters who use magic and everybody else who uses magic, because they're kind of a bit unstable all the time. You're always on the edge and they can just, like, wipe out a city or wipe out a town. And there's a scene near the start of the book which did that really well, where you're going, why do people not like these origins? What's really wrong with them? And by the end of that chapter, you're like, oh, shit. Oh, right, now I get it. And the guardians have their kind of anti-magic magic, which kind of balances them out in my way. Not sure I needed the pirate interlude. That's one of my notes. The revelations are a bit heavy-handed when I guessed the connection so early. Yeah, that's another of my notes. Oh, here's one. There's a few lines which I made a note of. One of them, which is bad in the audiobook, where it wasn't edited properly. She says, she doesn't understand the designs of this thing. And then, she doesn't understand the designs of this thing. And I'm like, you could have edited that better. That was the only repeated line that I heard in this audiobook. And also there's a line which was written, whenever I hear the words or the line, so it goes, I always think Slaughterhouse-Five. But in this case, she said there was a line which says, she considers killing him right there and then. And so it goes, they did this and this, and it's really difficult if you're talking about she considers killing him right there and then. And then I heard, and so it goes, I just think, oh, she did kill him, because that's the line that's said after every mention of death or dying in Slaughterhouse-Five. Anyway, so that's an interesting thing. What else have I got here in my notes? Let me just scroll up and make sure I didn't miss anything. No, I think I've pretty much got all of that cleared off. Stone Eaters, yeah. Obelisks, yeah. I kind of mentioned all of those people. Yeah, that's all my notes. I don't think I've got very much else to say about this, but except to wrap it up. Oh, no, let's wrap it up with an Audible ad. I've not done one of these in a while. If you've enjoyed this podcast and you think, hey, I'm going to check this book out, it is actually a really good audiobook, and you can get one for free if you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Sign up for a free trial, sign up for a 30-day free trial start, and you can check out this book. It really is worth reading. It kind of annoys me that the Hugo Awards picked a good one this year, because it kind of makes me think, oh, maybe the Hugo Awards people have taste now. Maybe they'll change the rules. So actually some good books will be nominated and some good stories will be nominated for once. But don't hold it up. Anyway, so go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. I have a platinum plan there and I'm very happy with it. I get 2 books a month. If you get a gold plan, you can get one book a month. But you don't have to check the fifth season out for free. There's like 180,000 other books that you can check out. So audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Check it out. I have 5 credits left, but I'm getting through them. So, I'm going to give this book 4 stars because, like I say, I think it's a really good book. But, like I say, I had some story issues where I thought it was... the story that was told, I enjoyed, but I could kind of do with a bit more. But like I say, there's already another book out. Maybe I can just get a bit more. Here it says on the fifth season Wikipedia page, it says... I was trying to work out, is this meant to be a trilogy? Let me have a look. Goodreads.com. Broken Earth Book 1. If I click on that, will it tell me what other books are coming up? The good thing is, I didn't go into this knowing that it was start of a trilogy. But, you know, with these fantasy stories, it's kind of like you kind of assume that it is. It does tell a complete story. It starts... We get a beginning, middle, and end. There are hints about what might come in the next book along, but this does tell one character story, 3 character story from beginning to end, and it works out well. So I do recommend it as a standalone book. Yeah, so far only 2 books have name: the fifth season, Broken Earth Book 1, The Obelisk Gate, The Broken Earth Book 2. Check it out. This one. So, yeah, 4 stars overall. And what else have I got to say? Oh, yeah, normally I go along here to goodreads.com and see what my friends think. And 63 friend reviews, 4.13 average from listeners to the SFBRP and friends I have on goodreads.com. So that's pretty good. Jenny from Reading Envy, 5 stars. Tudor, 5 stars. Lindsay, 5 stars. Did anyone give it less than 5 stars? Yeah, Mikhail Kodanoy. Codney rated it 4 stars. 3 stars by Stevie Kincaid. He says, yes. Oh, yeah, Damaya. You are Damaya, and Damaya is you. From that point on, the story of Damaya is narrated in second person. This was not a good choice. I found that was actually okay. I'm one of those people that as soon as we get into those story, it's... It's fine. So, once you get into it, I'm just reading here. Jemisin handles sex and sexuality in a very matter-of-fact and non-glamorous way. That was very refreshing. Yes, I agree with your review. Why do you give it 3 stars? Anyway, so that's pretty good. And overall on Goodreads, 4.31. Generally on Goodreads, this book was rated out of 5. So, yeah, generally well-received book. You can become my friends on Goodreads, and then I can also see what you think of this, because after I do my review, I like to look through and see what my friends think about a book here. And if you're going to recommend a book, the best way to do it is on Goodreads. Either send me a message. Don't just send me one of the book recommendation things. You have to say why I should read it. And also, you can go along to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and share that on the thread, books I would like to see reviewed. And if other people say, hey, yeah, I want Luke to read that book too, the chances of me reading a book that you recommend go up massively. So check out Goodreads and the SFBRP listener group on there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can also follow me on Instagram too. You can follow my travels and my juggling and all the other adventures that I get up to in pictorial form by going to Luke Burridge, at Luke Burridge, I guess, on Instagram. Not quite sure how it works. And if you ever think, hey, I wonder if Luke has read this, go to sfbrp.com and click on episode lists, and you'll find a list of all the books I've read, and you can sort by author, you can just search, you know, command F, I think that is, control F, and search the page. You can order by author, you can author by book, you can author by rating, length of podcast, how big the MP3 file is as well, and episode number and stuff like that, so you can check out this book. And what else was I going to do? Oh yeah, Hugo Award stuff. I was thinking, what other book have I read recently, which has come out in 2015? Because I think that's how it works. Which book did I read in 2015, which I would have given a Hugo Award to over this book? And I was thinking, oh, Southern Reach, Acceptance. But I think that was nominated the year before, did it? Was it? Or was that for some other thing? So, or it would have been, maybe it won a Nebula Award or something like that. The Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy. So there'd be that one. Maybe, but I think that's already passed through. And I was looking through the books, and maybe, I mean, I don't read a lot of books, but this is certainly one of the better books that's come out recently. Certainly better than The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which will probably win the Hugo next year. Much better than Quantum Night and Unforgettable. What else have I read? No, I can't really find very much else that I've read which has come out recently. Yeah, Ancillary Sword is better than that, although I did enjoy that series. And so I guess I don't actually read that many series. Oh, Slow Bullets. I think that was nominated for award, but I don't. That didn't win, did it? Because that was in the novella section. And I think that was one of the Rabid Puppet Slate books as well. So it's unfortunate for these authors who get caught up in this kind of stuff. I kind of feel sorry for them in a way, but this three-body problem. Yeah, and that came out. That was nominated last year, so I'm going back too far in the thing. Anyway, so, yep, I agree with Fifth Season. It's the best book that I read, which came out last year. That I read. I don't keep up to date on that many new books. So that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, for any other reasons as well. I've got a few emails that I need to get back to. But that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.